This is ESPN Radio.
Sometimes you need to set it and then maybe check on it in a little bit. Make sure you got all the ingredients right here. Mix things up a little bit if need be, because so far, the Kansas City Chiefs may no longer qualify. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We got plenty of great stuff coming up. Xavier Scruggs going to get us ready for some MLB action. Following us, we take you guys up to coverage of the MLB on ESPN Radio starting at 6:30 Eastern. Right after us here, Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst, going to stop by and help us take stock of this weekend where the Buffalo Bills now in contention for the title of best team in the NFL. But we still got more football action to go. And for more on that, it's time for the Monday Night Football Preview brought to you by Progressive Insurance. And we head to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to Tyler Foljam, our ESPN sports betting analyst, one of the great co-hosts of the Daily Wager. And you can check him out around ESPN Radio on the weekends here as well. Tyler, how we feeling, man?
Feeling good. It's actually, it's going to sound crazy, a little chilly in Vegas at like 68, 69 degrees. The wind is howling, so nice. Got a jacket on today, but ready to attack Monday Night Football, brother.
There we go. You know what? We appreciate it. Thoughts and prayers to everyone, unfortunately, dealing with the cold front in Vegas, like our friend Tyler Foljam. All right, Tyler, if it is chilly out there here, then warm us up as we look at the game tonight here. Lamar Jackson and the Ravens going up against this Indianapolis Colts defense here. Big picture on this game for this Baltimore team who's been banged up a lot of this season, trying to make sure they stay on the right path here. How do we feel about the Ravens heading into this game overall?
Yeah, I like the Ravens in this game. I would lay the 7. I'm seeing 7.5 now on Caesars. So shop around, see if you can find 7 or buy it down to 7, even buy it down to 6.5. They're just the better team, and I think I can project comfortably a win by a touchdown. Lamar Jackson has played wildly efficient football this season. He's been a lot better, even though the box score hasn't shown it. He's been watching games. You know that his receivers have dropped some passes, most notably Marquise Brown against Detroit, left like 150 yards and 2 touchdowns on the field that would be box score stats attributable to Lamar Jackson and make his season-long line look a little bit better. So I just love that the Ravens have survived the myriad injuries, all the adversity, to be 3-1. Very easily could be 4-0 if they didn't let that game slip away against the Las Vegas Raiders. So again, wildly impressed with what John Harbaugh has done. Lamar Jackson is playing at an MVP caliber level. Again, even if the numbers may lie a little bit there, he's been one of the 5 best quarterbacks, I think, week in and week out in the National Football League. So I like the Ravens -7. I like Lamar Jackson over 26.5 passing attempts because of how efficiently he is playing, because Mark Andrews, Marquise Brown, Sammy Watkins are healthy, and Rashad Bateman, their first-round draft pick out of Minnesota, might be getting his first run. So I just think based on the game script, pace that we should see, I'm projecting him closer to 29 or 30 passing attempts, so I'll go over 26.5 for Lamar Jackson.
Tyler, if I'm picking up what you're putting down, the game script is going to have the Colts playing from behind in this one. So how does that project in terms of potential player props for the Colts?
You're absolutely right, Canty. I think they will be playing from behind, so that means throwing the ball a little bit more. And I'm going to look to their top wide receiver, Michael Pittman Jr., the third-year, I believe, product out of USC, is really the only viable weapon they have on the perimeter for Carson Wentz to throw to. He's commanding a massive 26.5% target share, 40% of the air yards the Colts are throwing out there. So there is a reception prop over 4.5. It was plus money this morning, but it's now down to -105. I would still jump on the over there. He's had 6 catches in each of his last 3 games. He's getting 9 targets per game. So I think 5 is a very reasonable number of catches for someone who, again, is being looked at way more often than all of his teammates. I think his receiving yards prop is 53.5. And again, I would dabble with that on the over there. I just think if this game goes the way I expect and Lamar and the boys jump out in front, then Carson Wentz, even behind an offensive line that's missing Quentin Nelson and Braden Smith, they're starting right tackle, is going to be dropping back to throw the ball a lot. And usually when that's the case with Carson, he looks to Michael Pittman.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're talking to Tyler Foljam, our ESPN sports betting analyst. That was the Monday Night Football Preview brought to you by Progressive Insurance. With insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. As I mentioned, we're taking you guys up to coverage of the MLB on ESPN Radio. We got Rays and Red Sox coming up after us, Tyler. And when they're not involved in 13-inning ground rule double-related shenanigans here, we know this is one the Red Sox have a chance to close out here. So looking at this game, is there any action you like on this one?
Yeah, I'm staying away from the side because I do think it's kind of a toss-up here. I do like the total going over, and that may seem like chasing all the runs we've seen in recent games, but it's going to be a bullpen game from the Rays. Colin McHugh is going to open, and he's very good, but this Red Sox offense is hot right now, and they've got a lot of momentum that they can ride at home in front of their home fans. Meanwhile, on the Rays side, they are a lineup that can feast on left-handed pitching. Eduardo Rodriguez is a pretty good starter for Boston, but he's a southpaw, and although he is better normally at Fenway Park than he is on the road, there are some bats that can just absolutely mash lefties in the Rays order. I'm speaking specifically of Nelson Cruz, of Randy Arozarena, of Wander Franco, who is just a wonderful talent, and then a name you might not know, Jordan Luplo. He's a guy who smashed lefties to the tune of a 900 OPS and a 139 weighted runs created plus. So he's 39% better against lefties than an average major league player. So they have a deep lineup, the Rays do, especially against left-handed pitching. So I don't know who wins this game, but I think both teams put some runs up on the board, and we have another kind of high-scoring, long, drawn-out American League slugfest. Again, don't know who wins. The value is kind of on the Rays a little bit, but I'm much more confident projecting the over of 9.5. Even though it feels like a chase, I do think we're in a spot again where both offenses can operate at the upper end of their expectation.
Tyler, switching over to the National League, we got Alex Wood facing off against Max Scherzer in the rubber match in the DS with the Giants and the Dodgers. What play do you like in this game?
Yeah, this is a great series. I'm not surprised that it's 1-1. And looking at game three, obviously the Dodgers have a fantastic, great team, loads of talent, and Max Scherzer is going to be the best starting pitcher in any matchup that we see. However, I think the pricing is off for the Giants. That's why I'm going to play them on the money line. As great as the Dodgers are, it's not like the Giants aren't just as good. I mean, they are the team that won the NL West. Alex Wood's been great all year long, has pitched very well against the Dodgers this year as well. So even though there's a slight advantage on paper for the Dodgers at home, I think the pricing doesn't reflect that. I'll play the Giants on the money line at plus 183. If you do the math, that implies a 35% chance or win probability for the Giants. Do we really think that the Giants in this matchup, with the way they played all season long, even against Scherzer, you'll only win this 3 out of 10 times? No, I think it's probably closer to a coin flip, a 45-55 or a 50-50 coin flip, again, even with Scherzer on the bump. So I'm not willing to lay 203 with the Dodgers in this matchup against a Giant team that proved for 6 months that they're every bit as good as the Dodgers are. And Alex Wood is a pitcher that I trust in these matchups. So regardless of the outcome, even if the Dodgers win, right now, with the data that we have, the right process is to bet the Giants unless that price comes crashing down and makes it closer to even. Then you could see some value on the Dodgers. But right now I still see on Caesars that the Giants are plus 183. So that's the way I'm going to keep betting.
Always remember, no one's ever had a bad time trusting the process here. Make sure you guys follow him on Twitter at Tyler_Foljam and check him out on the Daily Wager and on ESPN Radio. Tyler, enjoy the game tonight. Enjoy Major League Baseball's action tonight in the coming days. We'll talk to you next week. All right, man.
Will do, fellas. Thanks.
And again, reminder, the Road to the World Series goes through ESPN Radio. Catch all the postseason action presented by AutoZone on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Tune in. The ALDS series continues as the Red Sox host the Rays. Coverage begins right after us. We take you up till 6:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coming up, next, after we look at the data in the NFL, do we spit out that the Bills are the best team in football? Here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Not an obit by any means, but Kansas City, where are we defensively and how big a concern is it moving forward?
I think it's a huge concern. If you look at the way they play defense tonight, it has to be alarming for them.
Just how freaked out are we by this Kansas City Chiefs defense? We will ask Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst, coming up in about 10 minutes here on Canty and Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and that guest, like all our guests, will join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, it was one of those weird nights. The rain delay games are always a nightmare, having to go back in, take the pads off here. it did lead us to an exciting discourse, because we can get to plenty about the Buffalo Bills and their standings in the NFL right now, maybe having a claim, some would say, around here to being the best team in football, how worried we are about the Kansas City Chiefs. But watching the Sunday Night Football crew have to discuss and lamp ad nauseum about the status of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the locker room was the debate that I was most excited to see enter the chat.
That was hilarious, actually. But, I mean, that speaks to, like, the craziness around last night's circumstances and being able to have a weather delay that went that long. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's used to that. The players, the broadcast crew, nobody's accustomed to having a halftime that's over an hour long and then the players having to go back and try to warm back up after so long of a period of inactivity. So, I mean, it speaks to the uniqueness of the circumstance, but I got to give credit where credit is due, man. Buffalo stepped up in a big way and they didn't let that delay sidetrack them from their objective, which was to prove to themselves that they are a team that's capable of being able to beat Kansas City. Now, we'll see what happens when it ultimately matters most in the postseason. But right now, the Bills are setting themselves up to be able to have that inside track for the number one seed in the conference, and that goes a long ways for this team to be able to get to where they want to go.
It's huge. I said going into this game, I wanted to see them get over this mental hurdle, because the Chiefs, like it had been for Lamar Jackson heading into this season and for many others, had been a mental hurdle as well as a W roadblock for some of these guys. And Josh Allen went out there before and after the rain delay and said, you can put this team on my back. I'm going to be the one able to go and make the big plays. He talked about that at the podium after this win.
It was good. I mean, it was one of those games. I was talking to some of the guys. I know we didn't have a lot of plays. We didn't have really a lot of third downs, really a lot of first downs. But we had a lot of explosive plays. Guys got open, made some unbelievable plays. E ran a great route. Dawson, ad-libbing. And again, just our backs, you know, were big when they were trying to go with the cover two stuff, getting it to them and just getting it to them quick and just getting some rack after that. But our guys made some plays. And again, when you have a defense that can go out there and play against a really good offense, maybe one of the best offenses in the league, and do that, you know, it's very reassuring.
And Chris, I think that's really where the rubber meets the road on this is you look on the other side for Kansas City. It's still an elite offense when you look at the numbers they're putting together. But against a good Bills team, you saw that offense stressed to the point by their defense where they looked uncomfortable and out of sorts. And on the other side, a much more balanced Buffalo team able to make those off-schedule plays and make it look like a natural reflection of their offense the way Josh Allen and all those names he mentioned did.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that Bills offense ran 54 plays and they scored 31 points. I mean, that's pretty damn efficient to be able to do that. They're going to challenge you in every area of the field. They're going to challenge the width of the field. They're going to stretch your defense that way. And they're going to challenge you in the vertical passing game. And they got a quarterback that can put it on his receivers. I mean, Josh Allen threw a couple of dime balls yesterday. I mean, the throw that he had to Dawson Knox down the field. There was a throw that he had to Emmanuel Sanders. And then, of course, the one over the top to Stephon Diggs that was just short of being a touchdown, get stopped within the 10-yard line. I mean, you see the arm talent from Josh Allen, and you just realize how much more difficult it makes this Bills offense to defend. And then couple that with the fact that your quarterback can also be his own blocker in the run game, and then you do have some semblance of a run game with that 1-2 punch with Zach Moss and Devin Singletary. You realize this is going to be a tough outfit to stop. And then, of course, they have the defense to complement that offense. 4 takeaways last night, including a pick 6. I mean, the Buffalo Bills are for real. I mean, we've been saying it through the first, you know, few games of the season, but we also acknowledge that their strength of schedule wasn't the best. They played against some opponents that we don't expect to be very good this season, but this was the opportunity to come out against a team that we all expect to be in the playoff picture once December gets here. And the Buffalo Bills absolutely put their foot on their throat last night.
Now, Chris, I'm willing to say that I think at this point right now, do I think it's going to hold true for the whole season? Probably not. But I think the Buffalo Bills can be the best team in football right now. I think I'm ready to say that after the performance from this weekend, because we talked about they treated inferior opponents like inferior opponents. That held true with the Chiefs. In every aspect, they were the better team in last night's game. Are you willing to go that far? Is there another team you think is better?
No, I can't take it there yet. I mean, I like the Bills. I like what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, they've got the most takeaways of any team this season. They've got 15 takeaways in the first 5 games, which is insane. But I'm not ready to crown them just yet. Like, there are 2 teams in the NFC that I would give the nod to over them right now. That would be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who to me are still the best team in all of football. And then the Dallas Cowboys, I think their offense is the most dominant unit of any unit in the National Football League. Like, the Dallas Cowboys offense is the most dominant phase of any team in the National Football League because they can run it, they can throw it. You've seen that yesterday. Dallas Cowboys ran it up for over 200 yards on the New York Football Giants, led by Ezekiel Elliott. And then you see what Dak Prescott is doing in the passing game. They're playing at elite level. They've got elite level weapons. I mean, every single position, whether it's wide receivers, tight ends, you know, running backs, your quarterback, your offensive line, they have everything in terms of what you would look for from a balanced offense. So I would put the Dallas Cowboys and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers ahead of the Buffalo Bills. But at this point, when we start breaking down these teams, you're talking about splitting hairs. They're all really, really good.
It's some incredible teams, and we're just getting to the tip of the iceberg, especially when it comes to the AFC. So coming up next, are the Bills the best team in football, or did we already get an AFC title game preview this past weekend? We'll get to that with Mina Kimes, and we'll do it after this word from DraftKings. Well, I have Bank of America on here, so I will do Bank of America instead of DraftKings here because, guys, it's baseball season, and you're ready to go all out. So you ordered the essentials to make game day a success. You got a jersey, a power recliner, a bigger screen, and you use your Bank of America customized cash rewards credit card, choosing to earn 3% cash back on online shopping. Rewards that put you towards an essential piece of that celebration, an air horn. Which reminds me of training camp, which is scary in that instance, but great in this instance here. So focus on the good stuff here and apply for yours at bankofamerica.com/more rewarding. Copyright 2021, Bank of America Corporation. Back with Mina Kimes next on ESPN Radio.
From the biggest names in sports.
Justin Herbert, ladies and gentlemen.
To the stories that matter.
The New England Patriots want to play that way. They want to protect
the young. And plenty of opinions.
It's simple. Justin Fields is better, but I'm willing to.
And it starts every morning with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max right here on ESPN Radio. Or just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN Radio. This is ESPN Radio.
I don't see him as the quarterback next year for the Colts.
Carson Wentz will be the quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts. This team is a good football team.
Lamar Jackson, he right now is the most dynamic playmaker that we've got in the sport.
Kane Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're brought to you by Fidelity Investments. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canny. And we got Monday Night Football coming up in a little bit. Ravens and Colts. We can revisit some of the dynamic playmakers in that game, but as Mina Kimes joins us now, ESPN NFL analyst, one of the great co-hosts on NFL Live and of the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny podcast. Mina, did you or did you not say in referencing what we saw last night, the Bills and the Chiefs in Sunday Night Football, that when it comes to the Buffalo defense, you are now a Bill-ever?
I tweeted it. Saying it out loud makes it sound a lot worse.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, hearing those words, I regret even tweeting it, frankly. But I'll explain myself. You know, heading into this game, given the slate of opposing quarterbacks that the Bills had faced, I was not ready to call them one of the best defenses in the NFL. Just had to see more, especially, I would say, from the pass rush. And that's kind of ironic, given that, you know, they blitzed Mahomes just once the entire game, which is not an unusual approach to playing Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs at this point, but the execution up front from that four-man rush, particular how they were able to contain Mahomes, force him off of his spots, and then just play sticky coverage in the back. You heard all night in the broadcast, the announcers were talking a lot about how they were sitting in too high, but beyond that, I would say, you know, on third downs, the level of coverage we saw when they were playing man was really impressive to me and made me feel comfortable calling them elite.
Mina, I hate to be bringing up old stuff. I feel like we got to pour one out for the 2021 Seattle Seahawks. But we got the news on Friday about Russell Wilson missing the next 6 to 8 weeks. I wanted to ask you what his injury means for his future in Seattle.
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah, and of course, it's the relevant story here, or storyline rather, is what happened last summer, which was all the reporting around Wilson's dissatisfaction in Seattle, wanting changes, wanting potentially a trade, though he himself never said that. And I do think that the injury potentially affects that. So first, we should probably, you know, establish we don't really know how long he's going to be out. Initial reporting suggested 6 to 8 weeks. Now we're hearing could be as little as 4. I believe Pete Carroll called him a generational healer, which is just incredible. You know, but the problem is the Seahawks defense is so bad that they're going to struggle in games without him. That frankly, they would probably struggle in a lot of games with him, as we've seen. I thought Geno Smith was really competent in relief, but there's a reason why he's not one of the starting quarterbacks in the NFL, and the notion of him playing the Steelers defense is not pretty to me. By the way, Sunday Night Football next week, Steelers Seahawks, and you're going to like it, America. No, you're not going to like it. Chris, I do think all of this casts his future into doubt, because if this is a disappointing season, as it seems to be, I imagine that's going to make it more likely that Wilson's going to want out.
Kenny Angola Jr. talking to Mina Kimes on the Goodyear Hotline. Mina, speaking of bad defense, is there anything that fixes the Chiefs' defense during this season, or is it just going to be a year of Patrick Mahomes and this offense trying to overcome their mistakes?
You know, I think this is it's a fascinating question, Mike, because when I was watching them last night, obviously Chris Jones, who's their best defensive player, sorry, Chris Collinsworth, it's not Daniel Sorensen, was out. And it is a dramatic impact on that defense. But we've seen them struggle all year, even when Chris Jones played. Granted, Frank Clark didn't play when Chris played. The problem is, well, there's a lot of problems on this defense. They can't stop the run. They can't cover. They can't rush the passer. Geez, I just named everything a defense does, so that's not great. I don't think the coverage is going to get significantly better. They just simply don't have the personnel. I do think they can get more out of this pass rush with a healthy Chris Jones and Frank Clark. I think there's a possibility for them to improve up front. And while they'll never be able to consistently, you know, get stops, I think they can get to a place where they're creating more of the chaos we saw in recent years, even though they're not one of the more fundamentally sound defenses in the league.
Mina, another one of the marquee games in yesterday's slate was the Browns and the Chargers, and it was defense optional in that one because the two teams combined for what is it, 89 points or whatever. But I got to ask you, was that game more about Justin Herbert's greatness or more about the question marks surrounding Baker Mayfield?
I would say Herbert, because I don't think either defense, frankly, covered themselves in glory. And, you know, until that last drive, Mayfield and Herbert were going toe-to-toe. You know, I understand how you can kind of come away from that and feel that Mayfield's not on Herbert's level, and I think that would be a fair assessment, but it doesn't mean that the Browns can't contend. I think what it shows you is they're pretty similar to the Chargers, frankly. Chargers have a better quarterback. I think the Browns have a better offensive line. The defenses are actually probably similar, frankly, although built very differently. But my biggest takeaway from that is just, you know, Justin Herbert being a total superstar and just continuing to make explosive plays with both his arm and his legs on third down and under pressure.
He was dynamite this weekend, Mina. I want to ask you about another young quarterback that we're finally getting to see more of here. Trey Lance got the start for the 49ers. Jimmy Garoppolo's banged up right now. From what you've seen with Trey Lance, is this going to open the door for Jimmy G to be the starter again when they come back? Like, is this a door that we can reopen,
yeah,
or do they need to see this through with Trey Lance?
I would see it through. Not just setting aside what we've seen from Lance, which I'll get to. I would see it through because of what we've seen from Jimmy Garoppolo this year, which is not a lot, right? Like, watching him, he has not played well this season. He is a limiting factor. He is a limiting factor on this team. And just to be candid, a Jimmy Garoppolo-led San Francisco 49ers team is not a contender. I think that there's something to kind of recognizing who you are as a football team, which perhaps you're not a contender with Trey Lance either, and recognizing what your goals are. And I think their goals this season should be to continue developing Trey Lance and, you know, bet on the upside that you get from him, because the upside is real. You saw that in this game. You saw some ugly as well, but you also saw a quarterback who's learning. I think that's what really jumped out to me between this game and then his last game where he didn't start but came in relief for Garoppolo, is that he looks to be settling in as the game goes on. And yeah, he's got a little bit of a high heat on some of those throws over the middle of the field, but he's improving. And I think that's what you want as a 49ers fan. You don't want to just be mediocre.
I mean, the loss in the madness of all the missed field goals in yesterday's Packers-Bengals game was a pretty good game from Joe Burrow. I thought the kid showed a lot of toughness, being able to scramble for that first down on fourth down with his legs and taking a hit, almost getting cut in half on one third down scramble. But overall, with with Joe Burrow, where does he compare with the other young quarterbacks around the league, like Justin Herbert, like Josh Allen, and like Pat Mahomes? Where does he stack up with those guys?
Well, he's below all the ones you mentioned, in my estimation, just purely because of the arm talent that those guys have. Now, I thought Joe Burrow played well, yesterday, and has looked good this season. And I think he's accurate and smart and can make plays with legs as well. And is certainly a quarterback you can build around. You just named some of the three best quarterbacks in the NFL is all. But if I'm a Bengals fan, I'm super encouraged by what I saw, not just out of the offense and Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, who are making all the headlines, but the defense, which really bowed up against Green Bay at the end there and gave their team a chance to win by holding them to field goals. Then, unfortunately, their kicker didn't make field goals, but, well, you know, never kick.
No, never kick is something this show will absolutely always condone here. The factory of sadness that was kicking in the NFL this weekend definitely underscores that. Follow her on Twitter, at Mina Kimes. Check out NFL Live 4 Eastern on ESPN Monday through Friday. Download, subscribe, rate, and review The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. She will make you a believer. Thanks,
bye,
Mina.
Guys.
All right. Terrible puns aside, always a pleasure catching up with Mina Kimes. Coming up next, though, as we look towards the future for one team in New York City, how are we supposed to grade the New York Giants going forward? We'll find out if the grade can be anything other than incomplete next on ESPN Radio.
I'm not going to any medical diagnosis. I saw him in the locker room afterwards right there, just checked on him in terms of where he'll go toward the next week. Dan, I don't have an answer for you right now. We'll see where he goes. Obviously, we're all hopeful that he'll be back and he'll be healthy. We'll see where our medical with a number of positions going forward for this week.
Kane and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And man, oh man, we had to peek behind the curtain around here. We were not supposed to have a show today. We're taking you up to coverage of the Red Sox and Rays on ESPN Radio at 6:30 Eastern. The White Sox were supposed to play today. They are not playing because of weather anymore. So we got called out of the bullpen to go ahead and do this show. And because of that, I dial in to our pre-show meeting here. We do it on Zoom like basically everyone else in the world coming off the pandemic. And I hear our producer, Shannon Penn, noted Giants fan, bearing his soul to Chris Canty, former New York Giant, on what felt like therapy after this weekend's loss to the Cowboys. Like, Chris, Shannon, have you guys recovered from this? Because this one was the classic injury to insult with all the bodies lost. Again, Kenny Golladay leaves the game didn't even play in the game due to injury. Saquon Barkley rolls his ankle something awful in this game. Danny Dimes leaves the game with a concussion. You're like, are you guys okay? This is a wellness check midway through the show here.
Mike, I'm okay because yesterday's game was a matchup of two of my former teams. Keep in mind, I was drafted by the Dallas Cowboys, spent my first 4 years in the league with them before I went to the New York Giants for four more. So yesterday was a proposition where I really couldn't lose. When you start looking at the New York Giants, it feels like it's all bad at 1925 Giants Drive, not just on the injury front, but overall with the program and just the direction that they're headed down. It doesn't feel like this season is shaping up to be much of anything in terms of what the fans expected or what the owner expected prior to the things getting kicked off in September. So it looks like it's coming off the rails, Gojo, and quite frankly, I don't know how they get it back on.
Well, I'll say this, Chris, you're right. I forgot about the fact that you couldn't really lose in that one, so congratulations for a man who's getting ready to go back and celebrate his Super Bowl reunion this coming weekend in New York with the Giants here. Chris Canty stays winning on this one. Shannon Penn, our producer, you do not have that Cowboys backdrop here, so how you doing, bud?
No, I do not. No, not at all. No, sir, no. Somehow, some way, during the Giants game, my wife says to my son and I, you guys are too negative while watching the Giants. It's just not healthy. What do you want us to do? There was nothing positive to take from that. And the one positive thing we had was Kadarius Toney, but then he punches a dude with the helmet on. Like, I love the fight. I love the fact that you're there for your boy and Ingram was there for you. But what are you doing to potentially try to almost break in your hand, getting a boxer's break? I may or may not have had one myself in the past, but that's not the point.
Wait, hold on.
No,
hold on.
Sir. No.
He's trying to liken yourself and what you were doing there to Kadarius Toney in this game?
I may or may not have punched a wall out of frustration one time.
Seems like that might be a false equivalence. Just
yeah,
saying.
Just I mean, just a smidge. I wasn't going to, you know, go too hard on you because you're hurting right now. We want to heal right here. That being said, Kadarius Toney, I mean, the notion that there was ever going to be discipline for that first and foremost is hilarious. Like, that dude's the best player on your team right now, and you need to preserve him at all costs here. That being said, Chris, cardinal rule of fighting in football is no close fist punches to helmets here. What do you – you just got to fight smarter, not harder in this spot.
Yeah, young guy, you got to know a little bit better. But I will say this, man, he went off yesterday.
Woo.
I mean, the dude is a human joystick, 10 catches for a buck 89, and it felt like he was the only one – on that offense that had any urgency about their business after Saquon and Daniel Jones went out. So I'll give credit to the kid that he's got some fight, but he needs the rest of the team to come along with him. And yesterday, the Giants were just outclassed in every way. And I guess that gives credence to Troy Aikman's comments coming into this game where he said that the Cowboys were in a different class than the New York Giants. That showed. I know that the Giants were shorthanded, but I have some serious doubts about whether or not that game would have been any different had the Giants not had to deal with all of those injuries, because the Dallas Cowboys just got off to a little bit of a slow start, but they turned it on in the second half, and there was no turning back from there.
Yeah, the Dallas Cowboys played like a team that knew they were better schematically and talent-wise than their opponent, but kind of let their foot off the gas on the gate. Now, that didn't translate to the rest of the game. They eventually figured it out here. That Dallas team looks and sounds like an outfit that's going places this season. When you see those performances coupled with quotes from their key players talking about the standard that they hold themselves to, you mentioned for the Giants, though, it is about who else is going to be out there with Kadarius Toney and company fighting this out. We had Jordan Renan, our ESPN Giants reporter, on earlier here on Canty and Golic Jr. to talk about Saquon Barkley, Kenny Golladay, Daniel Jones, and any reasons for optimism going forward for the Giants.
Giants lost three big players yesterday, but I was just, you know, speaking to some people, and it doesn't look like this, like any of them are going to be like real long-term injuries. Like, you're looking at like at a week or two on most of these guys. So in the grand scheme of things, probably not the end of the world. Now, granted, it looked ugly when Daniel Jones is stumbling on the field. You know, in the final minutes of the game, he was outside on his feet talking to his parents, having a lengthy conversation with them. And from what I was told, he was in good spirits. And, you know, you never know with the concussion part of it, of how guys heal, how they recover, or how quick it's going to be. The early returns were fairly optimistic on Daniel Jones.
And we're glad to hear all of that, first and foremost. We're glad we're at a place in football where everyone involved in that situation saw him and said, we got to get this guy off the field because he is not well. That wouldn't have always been the case, but... Chris, whenever they get Daniel Jones back this season, because they're going to, I wonder what this is going to do to their desire and ability to use him in the rushing game, because you talked about it earlier in this season. They're a better team when Daniel Jones is an active participant, a primary stakeholder in that run game. And now, after seeing this for a guy that's this important to the franchise, you wonder if there's some hesitance to call those plays later on.
Oh, no question. I think there has to be, especially knowing how important a year this is in evaluating whether or not Daniel Jones is going to be your franchise quarterback moving forward, right? The Giants are going to have to make a decision on this fifth-year option this coming offseason, so you don't want him to miss any more time this season beyond the time he's going to have to miss with this concussion. So, I mean, this is one of those situations where you're probably going to be a little more conservative with your play calling. The only question is, will you be afforded the opportunity to do that given the state of your team and where you're going to be at? Because, I mean, the next stretch of games for the Giants is absolutely brutal. They got the L.A. Rams this weekend, and after that, the Carolina Panthers on the road at Arrowhead, and then the Las Vegas Raiders before their bye week. So, I mean, if you're talking about missing significant pieces of your team in any of those four matchups, you could be talking about your season being over with by the time we get to Thanksgiving. So that's a scary proposition for Dave Gettleman and Joe Judge.
Yeah, a lot to consider there going forward for the health of this team, physically and mentally. You saw a lot of dejected looks there. Coming up next, though, we'll head to Major League Baseball. Talk about the weirdest thing we saw this weekend.